Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Sorry You're In My Seat, a weekly podcast that usually unites three best friends on a quest to find the greatest movies of all time. But this week, very unique for this show, I'm doing it on my own. I do not have Sam and I do not have James to talk about movies and films. Last we heard, James is safe on the asteroid. He's just looking for somewhere to drop off Bruce Willis. And earlier this week, Sam watched Tenet and he's trying to figure out how to invert himself so he can go back in time and unwatch Tenet. More about that later. No, it's just me this week, I'm afraid, but I did want to take the opportunity to talk about a few of the films that I've seen, in particular Tenet, New Mutants, both of those at the cinema, which felt weird going back to the cinema after so many months off. But also on streaming sites, there's some movies I've checked out this week, Ready or Not, The Platform, Zombieland 2, and Good Boys. So I'm going to talk about those, give some recommendations, and potentially some that you might want to steer clear of. If this is your first time, normally me and my best buddies, when they are here, get around the mics to talk about a different movie topic or theme within movies. So it might be a director, it might be a certain actor's best movies. We might look at a particular movie and do an in-depth dive, particularly ones from the 80s, which seems to be our focal point for the last couple of episodes. So do go back and check out, there's 107 other episodes that you can go check out and you can hear Sam and James in full glory in those episodes. Or if you want to stick with us, like I said, lots of movie talk in this shorter, condensed and somewhat unique episode of Sorry You're In My Seat. If you do like it, don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to leave us a review and just communicate, reach out. Let us know on social media if there's any topics or if there's any films you want us to cover, and we will do that. So this week, as I was saying, we're Tenet, New Mutants, Ready or Not, The Platform, Zombieland 2 and Good Boys. So I'm going to start with New Mutants. So if you're a film fan, you probably know the backstory of The New Mutants, and that's that it was filmed a few years back and then was a delayed release. They were talking about reshoots. It was described as a horror movie in the X-Men universe that also had elements of a kind of coming of age storyline. It was described as One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest meets The Breakfast Club. COVID happened. There was the Fox merger with the film studio. It was going to be on a streaming site. Then it wasn't. And anyway, it finally came out in UK cinemas. And I'll be honest, not to the warmest reviews from film critics. It's one of these films that kind of rated a 15, or is it a 12, or where is it lying in terms of its rating and who is the target audience for this movie? It's written and directed by Josh Boone. And it's also written by Nate Lee as well. And it has a real strong cast. I mean, it's got Maisie Williams in it from Game of Thrones. It's got Anna Taylor-Joy, who I think is just absolutely brilliant. Charlie Heaton, if you're a fan of Stranger Things. Alice Braga, Blue Hun. It's a pretty strong cast with some pretty solid performances throughout. Concept is that there are these five young mutants being held against their will in a secret facility or asylum where Dr. Reyes, played by Alice Braga, is trying to support them through therapies to understand and harness their abilities so that they can safely be released into society when they're no longer a threat. So the main narrative follows Blue Hunt's character, Danielle Moonstar, who, after a tragedy at the beginning of the movie, wakes up to find herself at the asylum, and she's learning the lay of the land through the help of the other mutants that are there and have been there longer. And the longer she's there, she starts to realize that all the mutants are being haunted by their fears, by their past, by the things that they're trying to run away from. Each character has a backstory that seems to be brought to life in this asylum through unnatural events. So the strong points to it is it's a pretty interesting storyline. I quite like the horror element to it. I love it when comic books, I mean, you look at Logan, how that kind of branched out into more of a Western narrative. And this movie has a few references to Logan in it and the X-Men universe, obviously, but it felt closer to trying to fit and be in sync with Logan than, say, the first X-Men movies. The problem with this one is that it doesn't really know what it is. Is it a 15, is it, or in America, is it an R-rated movie, or is it a 12? Is it a kind of a young horror movie, you know, more along the lines of things like Goosebumps? And all the way through it, I was thinking this is a kind of Buffy the Vampire Slayer feel to it, and they even address that in the movie. There is a scene of Buffy the Vampire being played in the background of one of the scenes, and it really felt, okay, that's the kind of tone that you're going for. Nothing too scary, too violent, or too bloody. But the problem with that is that then the jump scares or the horror moments didn't really land, and probably because I'm not the right target audience for who this movie was aimed at. I don't think it was overly exciting either. I found myself quite bored, and there is a long sequence at the end of the film that just drags, and originally on the trailers, and this isn't a spoiler, it is in the trailer, there's a CGI giant magical bear, and I was like, show me that bear, that's why I'm here, that's what I want to see. And then by the end of it, you're like, fuck it, that bear is so boring, just get rid of it now. It's kind of, you know, the one selling point that I felt it had going in didn't really pay off by the end of the movie. That being said, I am always in favor of when movies branch out and they try and do something different. I think if this was just another X-Men movie, of which I'm already confused with the timeline, I don't really know how it all fits together anymore, I would have probably been less interested. So I do appreciate that it went for something different. However, the payoff wasn't that great. This is a pretty middle of the road movie, pretty Blair, you know, and instantly forgettable. So if you're looking for a movie that you just want to go away, eat some popcorn, and if it's safe to go into a cinema just to lose yourself for a couple, you know, for an hour and a half, this is a pretty good action, horror, adventure, comic book movie. But don't go in there thinking of anything more than that. So that's The New Mutants. Do check it out. If you've seen the movie, let me know what you think. Next, let's look at Ready or Not. So when Ready or Not came out of the cinema, I didn't go and watch it. I'm not really into horror and violence or gore porn or those kind of movies. And so I thought I was going to stay clear of it based on what the trailer looked like. And I instantly regretted it when I started reading some of those reviews, and some of my friends that were coming back from, they'd seen it, they were saying, actually, yeah, I mean, it is a throwaway horror movie, but there's elements of comedy to it. It's got a pretty good storyline and some great performances in it. And the more I read, and it seemed pretty consistent that that was the general theme, that quite regretted not going to see it at the cinema. But it has been released this week on Sky Movies, and is available on Now TV and on streaming services. So sat down last night to give it a go. And you know what? Yeah, pleasantly surprised. An hour and a half long, like I say, comedy, horror, mystery movie that does have elements of violence and blood and stuff. But I mean, it's quite well contained. It is a 15 over this way, or R-rated movie in the States. It's a pretty simple, although incredibly ridiculous, storyline about a bride on a wedding night who, when taken back to the in-laws' mansion, this huge house in the countryside, they find out that at midnight, on whenever someone new joins the family at midnight, they play a game. Unfortunately, in this case, she draws the hide and seek card, which is the one that you don't want to draw, because it means that you have to hide. This is why the movie's called Ready or Not. However, if one of the in-laws finds you, they get to kill you, or at least wound you enough to sacrifice you later on. It's a instantly, you know, you're like, really? That's the storyline? And all the way through it, you know, as they're setting up the premise of the movie, you're like, well, this just wouldn't happen, or what have you. But then again, most horrors, isn't it? Most horrors have that ridiculous, it just wouldn't happen storyline. But this one, I did find it was quite entertaining, actually. In that 90-minute runtime, you've got 20 minutes of explanation at the beginning of the movie, setting up your characters and the hierarchy of the family and who is who in this family. And then pretty much it's an hour of them in the house hunting each other. In this, it kind of had the themes of movies like Get Out and you know, those kind of more modern horrors that have a little bit more to say than just blood, guts and gore. It was a, you know, there's a narrative in there about class divide and how the rich get away with whatever they want. It's got an awesome central performance by Samira Weaving, who plays Grace, the bride, who is being hunted by this eccentric and ridiculous family in this mansion, in such a great role, because that character could have been easily written as, you know, the kind of throwaway character who, you know, who hasn't got that, you know, the strength to carry it through, or it becomes a damsel or whatever it is. But do you know what? Actually, a really, really good character who you really kind of get behind. And there's the central performance. I found myself, if it wasn't for that, I think I probably would have been bored of the film, or at least it would have felt a lot more generic and like things that we've already seen. I think in this case, I think she brings something really original to the character, and her on-screen time is really great, actually. I think there's one of the standout performances that I've seen in a long time. It's supported by Adam Brody. It's also got Mark O'Brien in it. It's got Andy McDowell in it, who I haven't seen in the longest time. And it's got quite a sinister performance by Nikki Gudiani, who plays Aunt Helen. Yeah, like I say, on the whole, it's utterly ridiculous. And you know, one of these films where it's a head scratcher, like it just wouldn't happen. But get past that, get past the first kind of the concept of it, and just settle in for it. And it is actually pretty funny at times. Can be pretty violent at times, but on the whole, I felt this was a better horror movie than some I've seen recently. And If horror's your thing, definitely check this movie out. I think you'll enjoy it. Kind of reminded me of movies like Cabin in the Woods that have this kind of somewhat ridiculous premise and concept behind it. That as a viewer, you've kind of just got to swallow and go, all right, okay, if that's what you're telling me, that's fine. But in return, the film then has to deliver on some of those promises. And Cabin in the Woods, you know, if you've seen that movie, at the end of that movie, you really like, okay, yeah, at least it kind of fell by its convictions. And this felt the same. It sets up this premise and at the end, you know, really stuck by him. And I was like, actually, okay, that's pretty cool. Not what I expected. And I did find myself halfway through the movie kind of wishing for the ending that we got, and it did happen. So yeah, on the whole, pleasantly surprised. 90 minutes, you know, movie runtime. This is a brilliant one. And Sam on the podcast is our kind of resident horror guy, so I'll definitely be picking his brains to see if he's seen it. And Sam, if you're listening to this, you know, in your road to recovery, check out Ready or Not and let me know what you think. Okay, that's 11 minutes in. That's two movies down already. I've got so much appreciation for people that do solo podcasts and do this on their own all the time, because this feels so weird and strange. And I feel like I'm going mad just rambling away in my kitchen while my dog stares at me and I'm talking about movies. But I'm going to keep going. I'm going to save Tenant a bit longer because it just gives me a bit longer to think about it. So instead, I'm going to go for Zombieland 2. So I don't know what I was doing in 2019 that I missed Zombieland 2 Double Tap when it came out of cinemas, because I was a huge fan of the first movie. I thought Zombieland was great. I thought, you know, some great characters in it. And in a world when, you know, zombie movies and, you know, programs like The Walking Dead are dominating and you kind of get a bit bored of them. And, you know, Zombieland was a real kind of, you know, fresh blood in a dead genre to me, because mainly of the characters and the comedy to it. And particularly Woody Harrelson as Tallahassee, where it was just this kind of savage, you know, alpha male character, but also Jesse Eisenberg, Emma Stone, Abigail Breslin. I thought they were all really good in that first movie. And their characters, Tallahassee, Columbus, Wichita, and Little Rock, were, you know, ones that I wanted to revisit. I like when a film has years, you know, or distance between its sequel. You know, I don't think anyone was rushing to make Zombieland 2, but I'm glad, you know, when they said that they were going to, because I really wanted to revisit some of these characters. Storyline to this one is pretty basic. We start with the team going to the White House as their preferred place to live, because if you're in a post-apocalyptic world, why not live at the White House? And so we start straight in with a comedy. We're revisited with some of the trademark film style of the first one, with particularly Jesse Eisenberg narrating the opening of the movie, talking about the rules to how to survive a zombie apocalypse, breaking that fourth wall by talking to you, the audience, and really kind of trying to get you to catch up with where they've been and what they've been up to. So starts off with them in the White House. There's a lot of really fun scenes there and some great comedy with, you know, Woody Harrelson's character kind of taking the Oval Office and them all discussing who should be president and that kind of stuff. And, you know, to start with, it did feel like putting on your favorite jeans or listening to your favorite album. It was like, cool, I'm back with these characters. This is, you know, this is what I wanted. But then, unfortunately for me, the film didn't really take off from that. The storyline is pretty throwaway. I mean, it is that in this one. Abigail Breslin's character, Little Rock, is kind of craving people more her own age, you know, missing out on that kind of teenage years of, you know, other people her age, dating, that kind of stuff. So she disbands, she leaves the group, she leaves them a note that she's going to, well, they find out that she's going to Graceland, so Elvis Presley's Graceland. And then it's about the other three jumping in the car and chasing after her and trying to reunite and trying to make sure that she's okay. So the storyline is pretty much like the first movie. They're transitioning, they're moving cross country and coming into you know, hordes of zombies, which in this film as well, they've kind of, because of the time that's passed, they've said that the zombies are starting to fall into different categories. One in particular I loved, which is called the Homer, which is just this slow kind of bumbling, idiotic zombie. But then there's also these mutations, these ones that they call the T-800s, you know, that are almost unkillable. So you've got this added, just slightly new dimension to the movie. But other than that, a couple of new characters, Luke Wilson's in this, and Rosa Dawson, who's absolutely awesome in just about everything. They come into it as Nevada and Albuquerque. And like I say, the storyline's not too great. It's not got a lot to it. You kind of really are watching it just to see what them characters do and waiting for those big set pieces, the comedy pieces, which again, is kind of held together by Woody Harrelson's character. I'm a real big fan of Emma Stone, and this movie didn't really give her much to do. And Jesse Eisenberg, you know, who just doesn't age. Like in this, it looks like he's just finished Zombieland 1, you know. Again, there's not a lot really that they can do with their characters in this. It really did feel a bit like the Woody Harrelson show. And like I say, there's some CGI in this that just didn't take it off for me, particularly the end sequence, the last third of the movie, got a bit boring. The first one ended in that theme park, you know, the lights, the kind of the sounds, the clown, you know, scene in that last section of the first movie. This one really didn't have that payoff towards the end. There are a couple of good moments in it, and if you do have here in the UK, Now TV or Sky Cinema, it is available, and like I say, it's been out for a year, so more than likely it's on other streaming sites as well. If you haven't seen it and you were a fan of the first one, it is worth revisiting to just check out some of those performances. But you know, it's not a touch on that first movie. Kind of a bit of a letdown, really. I really, really wanted this movie to be as good as the first one, but it wasn't quite. So Zombieland 2, Double Tap, good go, but, you know, wasn't really needed. My appreciation for solo podcasters and people that do regular shows on their own is just absolutely skyrocketed, because this is the weirdest setup. You know, I'm here in my dining room just talking to myself. The dog's looking at me all crazy. You know, so you guys that do your own podcast, I don't know how you do this each week. My respect to you. Much prefer having Sam and James to be able to bounce off. But I'm going to go to the next movie, which is The Platform, which is on Netflix. Now, this was actually put forward by Sam, who I've said is kind of a horror guy. It was like, dude, let's do The Platform. Let's talk about it. You know, and I really had to sell me into it, because horror is not my thing. And, you know, The Platform's a hard 18. I read BBFC website about what is included in the movie, cannibalism, you know, stabbing, all this kind of stuff. And I was like, really? Like, and the fact that he's not here, the utter bastard, left me alone with this one. But like Ready or Not, I don't know. I don't know whether it's something new this week, but I fucking really liked The Platform. I thought it was a great movie. I thought it was really dark. Definitely not what I normally watch and what I'm normally into. And like Ready or Not, it was a horror movie that definitely had something to say, which is maybe a little bit more obvious, but again, about class divide. Now, if you haven't seen The Platform and you don't know what it is, it's a movie that I think it came out in 2019 and it was doing really well on the festival circuits and getting some quite good reviews. It's a Spanish movie that was then acquired by Netflix for distribution on their platform. And it came out in March, I believe, on Netflix. And so the basic premise of it is quite simple. It's, and I'm really going to have to be careful not to spoil this one. So all I'll say is, it's about an individual who wakes up in a prison cell, a concrete prison cell with another inmate, and then quick to learn that there are levels to this cell. It's a vertical prison, that they are on one floor, and there's a gap in the middle of the room that looks down onto endless other cells below them and quite a few cells above them. And every day at a certain time, a platform lowers with food on it that they can take from for a set amount of time before it moves down to the cell below and keeps going until it reaches the bottom cell. Basic premise being that if everyone only took what they needed, everyone would be able to eat. However, because this movie is a reflection on human society, and again, kind of similar to Ready or Not, the idea that the rich or the welfare, in this case, those on the higher floors, can get away with what they want. And it's always the people on the lowest levels of society, or in this case, a prison, are always the ones that suffer. It's that Black Mirror. It's that look on society and the way that we act, and in particular when people are in duress or people are in stress, how they act in terms of greed and that kind of stuff. So the premise of the movie, again, it's got some interesting elements to it, that you're only in your cell for 30 days before you get gassed. And then when you wake up, you could be on a completely different floor. So you could have a great month of being in, you know, the top 10, or you could have a terrible month, you know, when you work out that you're on, you know, floor 150, where only scraps, bones, and in this case, also human waste, you know, is all that gets down to them lower levels, which resorts to individuals having to go into things like cannibalism and, you know, horrible things like that to be able to eat and survive, so that hopefully the next month they get a better cell. So it's a weird one, like I say, because all the way through it, it's got this very clear narrative mixed with scenes of absolute violence and some of, you know, some really, really quite graphic scenes, mixed into, like I say, some great performances throughout this movie as well. Now, I'm going to butcher some names if I try and attempt it. Again, I don't know Spanish, so it's probably best and safest I don't try and pronounce some of these names and such. But it's definitely, if you're into horror and you've got the stomach for these kind of movies, this is one to definitely check out. Now, you know, just for the concept alone, this idea that, again, depending on what floor you're on, depends on how you live. There's some great interactions with cellmates talking to each other, and I think the script in this movie is incredibly strong. It's got some great central performances. Unlike Ready or Not, I felt this movie didn't have the third act that it needed. It does go where you think it's going to go, but then it does have a kind of an open ending for that's there for interpretation, when in actual fact, I would have liked this movie to have been more black and white, kind of clearer, a real kind of bookend to this movie and a full stop that really kind of, you know, ended it clear for the audience. It does open up to interpretation. But that being said, it is a quite unique film. I've not seen anything like this. The general concept of it, the trailer on Netflix, was enough to sell me into it. From what I'm describing, if you've never heard of this movie before, you might think, what the hell? Vertical prison, concrete cells, food on a platform that lowers every day, and what the hell? And they resort to cannibalism. You know, there are other things in it, like, you know, I won't give too much away, but there are symbolism to things like Dante's levels of hell. There are, you know, the numbers that equate to 666. There are, you know, there's all these, well, is this all for real, and is this you know, an actual prison that exists, or is this the imagination of someone? Is this some form of purgatory? Is this some form of hell? It's got all those questions to it. It's quite stylish as well. The film opens to this kitchen just preparing the best banquet of food you've seen, in this kind of almost Disney-esque feel to it, with chefs preparing to the highest quality this food that is then going to be lowered into the prison. The protagonist awakening in this futuristic cell, this concrete cube cell, and having a conversation with the older inmate and realizing that you could take one thing into the cell with you. He decides to take his favorite book. His cellmate has brought along a knife. You know, it's like, it's one of the movies where very at the beginning of the film, you're like, okay, you know, I need to settle into this, you know, really pay attention to what's happening. Even the way that it seductively shows you how to cook snails in this movie, it's just got loads of things that I'm going to definitely remember. Not the kind of film that I'm going to rush back to see, but definitely one that in years to come, when people go, have you seen The Platform? I'll be like, fuck yeah, that, you know, snail recipe in that film was, you know. But again, it's also a good transition movie. If you watch movies just for face value, and if you watch movies because, you know, you just like a simple narrative, but you're looking to get into films that have a bit more of a kind of more to say in it, and actually has more meaning behind it, this is a really good one to kind of go into. We also talked in a previous episode about the movie Colossal, which is a great gateway into those movies that it's not really, you know, the point of the movie isn't what you're seeing. It's what it's telling you, not what you're seeing. So I think it's great for that reason. But like I say, it is incredibly bleak. It is incredibly graphic. And at times it is quite challenging to watch. There are some things in this movie that I've never seen in film. And if I was with my buddy Sam to be able to talk about this, there is one particular scene I think we would make inappropriate jokes at all the way through. But it is one of the films that you've got to check out. So if you've got Netflix, if you like horror, if you're not put off by some of the more grisly movies, the platform is definitely one to check out, which is available now. So Good Boys is now out on some streaming sites, including Sky Movies and Amazon, and probably some other ones. And came out in 2019, brought to us by the teams behind films like Superbad and Sausage Party. So think of Seth Rogen and his mates. And this film very much is Superbad, but with a younger cast. In fact, the three central performers in this are pretty much in line with Superbad again. It's a film that stars Jacob Tremblay, who I'm a huge fan of. That kid is going to take over the world one day. You know, he's going to be absolutely massive. I mean, he's already huge and famous and everything, but I mean, as the child stars go, I mean, Jacob Tremblay, you know, he's going to win an Oscar one day. Keith L. Williams and Brady Noon, again, some quite charming, cute and funny performances by the main three. But I mean, unfortunately, this is a film that I lost interest so quickly. You know, after about 15 minutes, I was kind of bored and really, really had to resist turning the film off because I just didn't land with much of the comedy. This is, it's kind of like South Park. They're kids that are foul-mouthed. They're, you know, they're talking and acting like they're much older than what they are, and their characters are developed so that, you know, like I said, they take on the roles of comedy and style and actions that are way beyond their years. And the other elements of the comedy in this one are their naivety. So it kind of contrasts the two. On one hand, they're, you know, talking and acting like they're veterans of this world, and then on the other hand, they're naive and they don't know that what they're playing with is a sex toy, or they don't know how to kiss a girl, so they have to use a drone to spy on some neighbors and this kind of thing. And it all boils down to these kids that embark on this journey across the city to, they're trying to get to a kissing party, but along the way they come into storylines and characters around things like transporting stolen drugs. There's this gang of teenage girls that are hunting them at one point. Like I say, it's pretty throwaway. The storyline isn't too impressive. It's more around the set pieces and the comedy, which unfortunately for me just didn't land. It's this weird comedy, you know, when certain characters are talking and acting, you know, like, so there are secondary characters where one of them in particular is, you know, like the school gangster, the bully. And it was like watching Bugsy Malone, you know, all them years ago. And for me, sometimes that works and sometimes it can be great. And in a film, if it happens for a moment, it can be quite funny. But this really plays on that gag throughout the whole thing. And if it isn't funny at the beginning, it certainly isn't, you know, by the hour and a half mark. A lot of the performances in this one, I didn't really gel with, didn't really get. And ultimately, like I say, but by the end, I didn't really think there was much to it or any real point in watching it. It's unfortunate because sometimes a movie like Superbad gets away with it and becomes almost, you know, really good indie comedy with some great performances in it. And I can really see what they were aiming for with this film. And strangely or bizarrely, the animated movie Sausage Party, these are in a similar vein of their choice of comedy, you know, taking something that you think you know and putting an adult spin on it. But this movie just unfortunately didn't hit the mark. It's directed by Gene Stubinsky, who I think is more known for writing roles in small screen stuff. I think this was the first directed piece of work that he's done, and you can tell some of the edits and some of the choices behind the camera don't really sync up. The narrative of the film doesn't really play out at a pace that's particularly interesting or captivating. Like I say, just for me, you know, with the caliber and with the poster, you know, it's this kids movie that's R-rated with these great, you know, people behind the script and behind the production of it. It just really didn't land for me, unfortunately. Like I said, Jacob Tremblay is always worth watching. The three main kids in it, Kiefer Williams and Brady Noon, are, you know, it's a great movie for them to be involved in. But for me, just didn't land. And I'd recommend people avoiding Good Boys because it's not a comedy. Leaving us with just the small matter of Tenet, the new Christopher Nolan film, the one that is going to save cinema by getting us back in on those seats watching a big blockbuster movie. And Christopher Nolan's done that quite in a clever way. What he's done is he's created a movie that requires people to watch it three or four times before they can fully understand it, and that's how he's going to save cinema. Yeah, it's Christopher Nolan, so we know it's a non-linear storyline, and we know that there's going to be issues with things like the timelines and science and, you know, and all those kind of things that are, you know, interlaced and interwoven in Christopher Nolan's movies. And I'm going to start by reading the IMDb description of this movie, because I'm going to try and keep this as spoiler free as possible. And when I'm reunited with Sam and James, we'll probably have a more in-depth chat about it at a later date. But IMDb says, armed with only one word, Tenet, and fighting for the survival of the entire world, and a protagonist journeys through a twilight world of international espionage on a mission that will unfold in something beyond real time. Right, so we all saw the trailer to this one, or if anyone, if you listen to this, and you know, you're obviously a moviegoer, you've probably seen the trailer for this film. In that it looks like certain things are happening in one direction or one sense of time, whilst other events are happening in reverse time. And also the word Tenet being a play on the same forward as is backwards. The film stars John David Washington, Rob Pattinson, Elizabeth Debicki. It's also got Michael Caine because it's a Christopher Nolan movie. And Kenneth Branagh in a quite extraordinary performance in this movie as our villain. Now, without spoiling the film, let's go into it then. So it is particularly difficult to grasp and to get into. I went into this reading the reviews that said, come on, you know, a lot of it was around saying to Christopher Nolan, you've got to give audiences a chance to be able to follow this film or any film in that hand. And this, I mean, Christopher Nolan's movies, I am a fan of his work. I do like what he's done. I thought Prestige is a brilliant movie. Obviously a big fan of Interstellar, and Inception, Memento, and Insomnia, I thought was a really, really great movie. So and obviously the Batman movies, so I'm a Christopher Nolan fan. I like nonlinear storytelling. I like what he does with it. And he, you know, but the thing with Christopher Nolan is he feels like the school SWAT, you know, the guy who always gets the A star. And, you know, this movie felt like really showing off, you know, and almost pretentious in areas. You know, it wasn't enough to get an A. This is like an A++ star sticker. You know, it's just really, really felt a bit showy offy and a bit pompous at times. That being said, it is a good movie. And in there, I'm pretty certain if I watched it two or three more times and really understood it, I do genuinely think it's completely original, and intelligent, and it's the kind of film that makes you think, but it doesn't just give you the information. It doesn't just spoon feed you what you need to know. You have to, you know, you have to be present and aware and follow it. But Nolan in this one doesn't really help you with that. There are some fast edits, which again is a Nolan trope, particularly towards the beginning of the movie when you're really trying to sell in and just so much is happening. The first 20 minutes, I was like, oh, come on, just give us a bit of narrative or give us something that's going to help us kind of set up a bit of this film. And when that does, which typically in Nolan's fashion is, you know, normally in a Nolan film, you will get the two characters or two characters talking at some point and telling you what you need to know or what you might have missed. There's always an exploitation scene in Nolan movies. Normally they're walking through a city or, walking through a kind of, great landscaping, sweeping shot while someone's, like I say, telling you what you need to know. And that happens in this movie, but the sound editing is all over the place. It's a huge score in this movie that just overpowers and kind of knocks out of, and kind of really overshadows what the characters are trying to say. And it just made it really difficult. And, you know, for that, I don't think Nolan's going to do himself any favors, because this really is a film that you've got to pay attention to. In its central role, John David Washington is brilliant. He's such a great actor, and I believe comes from an athletic background and from sports. I'm not sure which one I don't want to quote. I believe it comes from an athletic background. In this movie, you can tell there are scenes where he's running with, particularly at the end of the movie, there's a siege scene where he's about 800 meters ahead of everyone. When the dude's running, he is gone. He's a real athletic performance, very physical performance. That, as we said, is as a timeline that moves forward and backwards. I imagine a lot of the filming he had to do in reverse, and then they played it forward. So a real great skill was needed in this movie. And I think John David Washington really, really brings it as the leading performance in this film. There is some issues with his character not having a lot of backstory, but when you know the film and you know how it ends, that's the point, because his backstory actually hasn't happened yet because it's a Nolan movie. And there's not a lot of emotional resonance in his performance. But again, I think that's more the script than what John David Washington is doing. Similar with Robert Pattinson, who I think is great in this movie as Neil, who, again, is kind of like the secondary, the sidekick, the support for John David Washington's character, who I think the two on screen together are brilliant. But again, emotionally lacking in anything or any depth to their characters. Elizabeth Debicki, I'm a fan of. I think if you haven't seen... The hotel manager. What was that TV series called? Anyway, she's great. The Night Manager, I think it's called, with Loki in it. And I think she's a great character again, but not really given a hell of a lot. You know, her role at the end of the movie is to distract the bad guy, and it's like, come on, like, give her something to do. She's a great actress and great performer. So again, with this, I think visually the film is great. The storyline, I think, is really interesting, bizarre and complex. But for me, it's you're not letting these characters really kind of do what they can do. And, you know, the only one really that's given the room to breathe and chew scenery is Kenneth Branagh's character as Sator, you know, as the bad guy, as this European villain who's straight out of a bomb movie. You know, one minute he's on lavish yachts and the next minute he's getting his hands dirty in criminal activity. Kenneth Branagh, who in interviews went on to say that he filmed the whole film without truly understanding what his role was or what was happening in it. So, it's, you know, if that's what your actors are saying, again, Nolan, you've got to listen. You've got to make this film a bit easier to digest. It's also got Aaron Taylor-Johnson in it towards the end of the movie, who I love as a performer. Nocturnal Animals is a terrifying performance in that film. Very realistic performance. And it's also got Himesh Patel in it, who we talked about a few weeks back with the movie Yesterday. And also Clemence Posey, who I think is absolutely fantastic. I mean, if you haven't seen the TV series The Tunnel, you should definitely check that out. I think she's absolutely brilliant. Like not all Nolan films, you go into this thinking, right, whatever I see in the first 10 minutes it's always that sleight of hand with Nolan. It's always smoke and mirrors. It's this distraction. And at the end of the film, it should make sense. And you go into this movie thinking, you know, I've got my wits about me, Nolan. I'm going to really pay attention. And what I'm seeing isn't really what I'm seeing. And I bet this is this. And are we watching the end at the beginning? Although in a relatively short career and compared to some of the other directors, Nolan has traits and tropes that are now a little bit predictable. So you go into this movie, you know, really kind of aware that, right, I might not be seeing what I am seeing. And I think this character is really that character. And you start questioning it. And the problem is there's so much going on in the movie at the same time that it becomes a real muddle, and it's 2.5 hours. So it's quite exhausting and taxing to go and watch. But nonetheless, this isn't Nolan's best work by any standards, but it is interesting, and it has quite a great concept to it, and some absolutely outstanding set pieces, in particular at the end involving a building that blows up, rebuilds and implodes at the same time because there are two narratives that are happening. And visually, I've not seen anything like that in cinema. The end is really the weakest part. Visually stunning, but in regards to being confusing, I'm still not really sure on a particular incident that happens in that end and how it all plays out. Also, what's really good about this is the conspiracy theories online about who some characters really are, and because it's a jumbled up timeline, are they actually this character that you saw earlier on? And there's also like mapping the final scene of who is going in what direction in terms of time, who's going forward and who's going backwards, and how that all interlinks. And it looks like, you know, an Oxford professor's blackboard of, you know, like, and this person's here and they're going there and it's going backwards. And you're like, really? We've just had 4 months off cinema. Like, let's break us into something a little bit easier than this. But it is Nolan. He is pompous. He's a bit show offy. He's like the goody two shoes filmmaker who seems to not be able to do anything wrong. For me, this is, like I say, an interesting movie. It's got a lot of strong points to it, but on the whole, not his best work. And I would have rather been able to have a fair chance at understanding the film than seeing what we saw and thinking, do I really have to go back and watch this again and again and again till I get it? I feel a bit cheapened by that. But that being said, this week, I was just so happy to be back in cinemas, you know, to see New Mutants and then to see Tenant, you know, within 2 days of each other in a very COVID compliant environment with, you know, very sanitized stations and lots of health and safety in place. Great team at the Odeon here in Lincoln, like really kind of putting in place parameters so that we can watch film again. To be honest, I would have watched a Michael Bay film this week. I was that enthusiastic to get back in the cinema. I wouldn't really. I'm not going to spend any money on a Michael Bay film, but you get my point. So I on the whole, a great viewing experience. I'm probably going to wait for this to come out on DVD and then go back and watch it in a bit more detail. So if you're a film lover, you've probably already got plans to see Tenet, or have already seen Tenet. Do let me know what you thought of the movie. Do you like Nolan? Do you hate Nolan? Was this film pretentious and full of itself, or was it entertaining? Did you understand it? Did you follow it? Because I think from what I'm grasping from film reviews and people's responses on the internet, I think it seems to be kind of a united review of the movie, being that it's probably a bit too complicated for us to follow at this time in 2020 and with what's happening on at the world at the moment. And also, like I say, it's maybe not Nolan's best work. But at the moment, I'm just pleased to be going back to the cinema and seeing things. So do let us know. And no doubt in a future episode, Sam, James and I will talk about it in more detail in probably a more spoiler-filled episode where we'll really break down the issues that we had with the film and where some of the film's strengths were, and maybe expand on that narrative a little bit more. So yeah, time traveling, espionage, Nolan movie, great central performances, but you know, go in with a clear head, don't go in hungover. So that is our episode talking about those different movies that are available now in cinemas and on streaming sites. Do let me know what you've been listening to this week, and hopefully next week we'll return to some form of normality with either Sam and I or Sam, James and I getting back together to do, I believe, Beetlejuice. We're going to look at that movie and do an in-depth deep dive into the film. So do check out that one. Again, apologies for the change of the format this week. Smaller episode, not as much jokes and laughs, I'm afraid. But do let us know how you get on and stay safe. All right, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.